Last week, the Food and Drug Administration released a nearly 700-page analysis that looked at whether cloned animals were safe for us to eat. The FDA concluded, quote, "Meat and milk from clones of adult cattle, pigs, and goats and their offspring are as safe to eat as food from conventionally bred animals." Does that mean that cream from cloned cows will be showing up in the dairy aisle in your supermarket soon? Probably not. Joining me now to talk more about it is NPR science correspondent Richard Harris. Richard, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Ira. Hi.
Why are we not going to be seeing them showing up pretty soon?
Well, for one thing, the FDA said it's safe, but don't do it, at least in the short run. There is a voluntary moratorium by the couple of people who are actually cloning animals already. They voluntarily said, we're not going to put our stuff on the market. And the FDA said, please don't, we're asking you not to lift that moratorium. Just leave it alone for now. They put this out to a 90-day comment period so people can speak up, because it is a controversial idea, and a lot of people in the food industry are quite nervous about this, and a lot of people in the general public are nervous about this. So the final green light has not happened yet, and it won't happen after the 90-day comment period. I'm sure there will be a long time that the FDA will sit around and deliberate over the comments that it receives. So maybe something towards the end of the year there'll be some word. But even if the FDA says, yeah, go ahead and do it, that still would not be an instantaneous opening of floodgates, if you will.
Yeah, I was wondering, are there even enough cloned cows or pigs in existence to make this a reasonable thing to consider, even if they got the go-ahead today to do it?
There are no good estimates, or no consistent estimates, I should say, of how many cloned animals are in the U.S. I think it's fair to say probably under 1,000 right now, and it takes time. Remember, what a clone is essentially it's an identical twin just born at a different time from the adult you're starting with. So it takes the time that an animal grows up to be useful. But the purpose of the technology, at least in the short run, is to take that prize bull that's worth a whole lot of money and to duplicate that prize bull. So the idea is not to have cloned animals in the short run, certainly, being your dairy cows or being the beef animals you would have, or the pigs for your bacon and so on. But it would be to take those extremely valuable animals and replicate those. And then those become the sires, if you will, for the next generation of animals. So you probably wouldn't be eating clones, but by and large, but you might be eating the offspring of clones. And that's really certainly where people see at least the first step of this is going.
Mm-hmm. But the FDA decision was very narrow. In other words, it didn't consider the economics of this, just considered whether it was safe.
Right.
To do this.
Exactly. The FDA is not supposed to bring in other arguments about, political desires, public a willingness and appreciation of these things, or these various things, and we all know that the FDA does tend to doesn't always follow that rule. They tend to do things that are political, but in this case, they said we're just going to rule on the extreme narrow science of what's going on here, and the extreme narrow science says they're safe, but it doesn't necessarily mean it would be accepted. It doesn't mean it would be good news for the industry if that happened. But so the FDA has not really grappled with those questions as yet.
Let's talk about the opposition. Are people opposed to it because it sounds like Franken-science, or are they opposed to it because they think the meat or the milk will be bad? Or what's your take on this?
What a lot of people say is there's something called the yuck factor, which it just sounds it's actually a technical term in the world of social science. It's the yuck factor.
It's not an inside the beltway term. Okay.
No, it's okay. But people really, the idea of clones is creepy, and to many, many people. And even if you sort of phrase it as neutrally as saying, well, it's an identical twin born at another time, that doesn't get people over the idea of clones, which, science fiction has gone crazy with the idea of clones over the years, and it does seem a little bit strange. That's one element of it. Another element is right now, there are it's harder to get healthy animals through a cloning process than through standard breeding. You have a large percentage of animals that have birth problems, essentially, that are not entirely healthy. And there are some people who say, let's think about the welfare of the animals. And the FDA did look at that also, and they said it's within acceptable limits for them. They did acknowledge that more clones are born with problems than other animals, but they said that it's sort of when, for example, in vitro fertilization, test tube baby technology, if you will, was used in cattle, that also had a very high failure rate and difficulty rate. And over the years, people have perfected the technology and brought those rates down to less mm-hmm. suffering for animals. But that's another thing. And there's also the next argument one hears is really sort of the slippery slope argument, which is that once you allow clones, even though that's an identical copy of an animal that you can, you know, sort of say, okay, that's just a regular animal, then it's obviously a technology that could be used extremely powerfully if you decide to genetically manipulate animals. And you get a genetic trait you want to introduce into an animal. You can do that. And then the best way to replicate that animal with this genetically engineered trait is then to clone that animal. So and that does raise a bunch of other questions in people's minds, for sure. And some people say, let's think about that when we're talking about cloning right now.
Mm-hmm. Would there also be the possibility, if you had a cloned population of animals, all genetically identical, if there was some disease, you know, we've lost the biodiversity that we like in our crops and our animals, you're going to wipe out the whole colony?
I suppose that would be a very long-term kind of consideration. I don't think that anyone sees the industry going that uniformly that soon. In the world of plant agriculture, of course, people have developed seed banks and saved some of the native traits, maybe not enough, but there's an awareness that that's an issue. And so they do bank seeds. So in case something like that does come up, they can go into their seed bank and pull out things that would work. So presumably you could have something similar with frozen semen, which is common in the livestock business, or some other mechanism for making sure that you have an escape route mm-hmm. if you've inadvertently created a genetic bottleneck that is going to get you into trouble.
Let me see if I can get a phone call or two in here. Clint in Moultrie, Georgia. Hi, Clint.
How you doing?
Hi there.
Enjoy the show. Thank you. The question that I would have is, to my knowledge, like, cows haven't stopped breeding. You know, the offspring are still coming forth. And the idea of this even being a subject of discussion, considering the fact that it's probably not even on, you know, even the furthest horizon as far as people, you know, actually eating cloned meat and whatnot, I guess, to me, it just seems sort of a moot subject to even be talking about, you know?
Yeah, what's the point? Yeah.
What's the point? Let me just jump in and remind everybody that this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We have so many cows. What's the point of cloning them?
That is a good question. And I think part of the answer is if you have a cow that has a trait that you really like as an excellent milk producer or has, you know, the kind of marbled beef that people like to have or whatever, then you really could say, okay, let's have more of, you know, of those prized animals that we have. But you make an excellent point, and people have, you know, we don't need more milk production. We already have plenty of milk production. So who really benefits from cows that produce more milk? We, you know, the country right now, you know, help subsidize the dairy industry
right.
because we have so much milk. So those are some of the social issues that people bring up when the FDA says, well, not our department, but it's not to say that's not a legitimate question at all.
Do you anticipate, or does anybody anticipate, that cloned products would have special labeling on it? You know, so this is from a cloned animal, or
some
we know the politics that's going to go on in that arena.
Absolutely. And some people are advocating for that. And the FDA's position right now is that it's indistinguishable from any other meat, so there's no basis for calling it cloned. But in fact, I think that there would be people who would want to do that, and maybe it's just so they could avoid clone food. But the reality would be, as we saw with labeling of irradiated food as well, that pretty well got rid of that really prevented that industry from taking off, because people is, you know, cloning is scary and irradiation is scary. And so labeling is a fairly effective way of tapping into public anxiety on things. I'm not making a value judgment about whether or not one should do that, but that's a reality of labeling.
Well, imagine the cloned irradiated food. But on the other hand, you have, you know, we have foreign export of food that, you know, the Europeans are shying away from anything that has anything to do with genetically modified food. Imagine the reaction on the other side saying, why do we want to have a cloned animal? We're never going to export this beef somewhere, you know, to Japan or to Europe, where they, if GM food is taboo, imagine what cloned food would be.
That's true. And I think that some of the genetically modified crops are finding markets overseas. Europe has sort of loosened its view of that. But that is clearly a concern, and a little bit of contamination of unapproved things getting into food shipments and so on have created all sorts of headaches for the industry. So it's not even clear that the food industry really would want this. I mean, there are a couple of companies that see profits potentially for them, but it's not at all clear right now whether the food industry as a whole will say, yeah, this is a good thing, we want to go do it, because of all the potential complications that come with it. So.
Yeah, so this is just the first step in saying, yes, if you want to clone it, you know, we'll make a decision. So you can decide on your basis, on your own business plan, whether you want to go ahead with this or not. It's, in other words, we'll give the sanction, give the 90-day whatever period is, and then if we okay it, you can go ahead to do it. We're not saying you should, because you may lose a lot of money, but you could do it if you wanted to.
Right. And then the industries will fight among each other because, for example, I think the dairy industry has been fairly outspoken about being concerned about this because of public acceptance. They don't want the public to say, oh, we don't want to drink milk at all. And so then it's a negotiation between them and the breeding folks whether or not this is a good thing for the industry as a whole.
Well, it's a good thing to have you on, Richard.
A pleasure as always, Ira.
Thank you for taking time to be with us. Richard Harris, NPR science correspondent. Thanks again.
Sure.
Our program was produced by Karen Vergoth, Flora Lichtman, and senior producer Annette Heist. Our directors are Sarah Handel in Washington, Charles Berquist in New York. Charles is also our web producer. Our intern is Stephen Orens. David Gura and Becky Vlamis worked the phones for us today. If you'd like to write us, we're always looking for ideas and your letters. You can do it the classic mail way. It's Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Or surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We are podcasting and blogging, and also listen to, as I say, past editions of Science Friday there online. Take them with you on the podcast. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there. We make free teaching materials. You know how hard it is to teach science these days in elementary school? We're going to help you out. If you want to teach science, we make free teaching materials for use from the stuff we do on Science Friday. Just look for the teachers button there. Also, we have links to social communities. Science social communities are sprouting up in MySpace and Facebook and Squidoo.com, and people are talking about science and Science Friday there, and we welcome you to join in and get in on the discussion. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.